Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlotnik. And today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Dwan Bent Twyford. Did I say it the right way?
That's right. You did.
Dwan like a swan. You taught me this.
I did. I taught you this.
So wonderful to have you. You hail from cold Colorado. Maybe wonderful. Maybe beautiful. It's the most beautiful state. So you live up in the mountains and you enjoy, I guess, beautiful views and probably winter sports. Yeah, it's gorgeous. I've been to that part of the country and I can't say enough. You drive through the mountains. I think it's the most beautiful state in the country, honestly. So you have a wonderful podcast and you have a wonderful.com website and you used to be the queen of short sales. So would you be so kind as to tell the audience a little bit more about you?
Well, sure. Well, thanks for having me on today, Mike. For all of you listening, I just had Mike over on my podcast, the most wonderful real estate podcast ever. So if you want to hear our conversation, we had a lot of fun over there. And so now I'm on this side over here. So I started investing in real estate. Actually, I was married. I had a baby. She was only 8 months old when her dad and I split up. So I was really unexpectedly a single mother. And I had always planned on being like the homeroom mom and the Girl Scout mom and the field trip mom and all those things like that. And now being single with no job skills and just like all my dreams were just shattered for there for a second, you know? And I thought, well, I have to figure something else out because if I go get a job and work for somebody else, I'm not going to be able to do the things that I wanted to do. And I purposefully waited till I was 30 to have a kid so I could like get my wild ways out and then, you know, be a mature adult and do all those fun things. So I discovered real estate investing, met a couple guys. They go, yeah, we fix up houses and we fix up cars. And I thought, okay, well, how hard could it be to fix up a house? I thought fixing up and decorating were the same thing. And as it turns out, they're not. Not the same thing. But I went after my first deal. I went to Home Depot, took a lot of classes because it turns out I don't have any actual rehabbing skills. And I sold my first house. I made $22,000. And I never looked back. And now I've been investing for almost 35 years. And I've done over 2,000 personal deals. And now my husband and I are rehabbing a town.
What does it mean, rehabbing a town? So you've done a lot of residential real estate, which makes a lot of sense. And how do you rehab a town? What does that mean?
So I'm still not exactly sure what happened. But when I was when I first started off investing, I lived in Florida and I started in Palm Beach County. Now there's a town down there called Delray Beach, which is I still have a house there. So I'm half Florida and I'm half mountains. And personally, I'm a beach girl. So I'd rather live there all year round. But my husband and my grandkids, they all live up here. So forces me to be a mountain girl too. But in Delray Beach, Florida, this was a whole entire downtown from the beach up to the highway, just mile. And it was 90% boarded up. It was a hood. It was really rough. And I bought a house that was like zone light commercial. I thought this would be a good place to start, have a little business. I moved into Delray Beach over by the water and I watched this town go through this like revitalization program. I watched this whole like 2 miles long get revitalized one little block at a time. And now it's voted like the best avenue in America, the best small town, the best this, the best that. But everything is so crazy expensive. Property values. I bought my little house for $170,000. It's worth like $1 million. So I watched that happen. So now fast forward decades later, I'm married to Bill. He's from a little town called Clinton, Iowa. So Clinton, Iowa is on the Mississippi River. So it's a little river town. And it looks like a little town that like time forgot. It's all boarded up. There's just a few businesses. And so we start going back for his high school reunion. So we're only there like once every 5 years. And we go, and I'm like, man, this little town needs some love, you know? And then we go back 5 years later, and then we go back 5 years later. So the first visit to the second to the third was 10 years. I said, you know, we need to, let's call somebody and see if they have some sort of a revitalization plan or something and see what we can do. Because I literally watched this happen in Delray Beach and was lucky enough to buy a couple of those little light commercial houses that got rezoned and for like 50 grand. And I ended up selling them for $800,000. I mean, just so much money. So we found out they have this downtown revitalization program, and what does it take, and what do we need to do? So we actually just planned, Mike, to buy one building. Because the downtown is, so here's the river, and the downtown is three blocks wide and three blocks wide. I mean, deep and wide. So it's just this much, and here's the river. And everything in the downtown is an opportunity zone. And the taxes that you pay go into a special fund to fix up the downtown. And they have all kinds of grants. I mean, so many grants, so much money that's available. And nobody was really doing anything. So Bill and I are like, well, you know what? We'll buy a building. We'll buy one building and, you know, we'll kind of throw our hat in to help revitalize. Well, the building that we bought it from a retired woman who'd already left Iowa and like moved to Florida. And then she told one of her, so this is what happened. It turned into a giant snowball. So she told one of her friends, hey, listen, the Twyfords bought my building. And her friend, all these women are widows. Their husbands owned all these buildings and they've been boarded up for like a decade. So then she tells her friend Carol, and she bought my building. You should see if they want to buy your building. So she calls up. She's got three buildings, three. And we're like, oh, I don't know. Three buildings is a lot. You'd have to owner finance them 100%. We'll mail you checks to Florida. So now we have four buildings. And then another one goes, hey, I heard you bought Carol's building and her building. And will you buy my building? And I kid you not, Mike, within 2 years, we had like 15 buildings.
Can I give you a little bit of feedback and just some thoughts here, just hearing you out? You said a couple of really interesting things, just got me thinking, right? You said it's opportunity zone, right?
Yes.
The second thing I heard, it's a small town. Is the area somehow looked at as a rural area?
Well, they have gambling in Clinton. So they have a casino and they have gambling. And all of the towns on the river, when you go down the entire river, all the old towns that were just sitting there have all been revitalized. So people that want to spend the day and drive up and down the river, every little town is revitalized except for ours.
So here's just a quick thought, just listening to you and just knowing a little bit about the one big, beautiful bill. And then part of that, there's a new opportunity zones. It's an expansion and extension opportunity zone. Just an idea, like we're chatting. So if this is rural, it has 30% versus 10% the deferral benefit and elimination. In other words, if somehow you turn this into opportunity zone project, investors could potentially write a check. And if it's rural, it's not 10% deferral, it's 30%, and ultimately savings. So it's okay. Actually very powerful. If you're an opportunity zone and you're rural, you could do really, really well and deliver revitalization to the town. But the opportunity zone benefit just adds more economics to investors, where it would be more attractive because of the tax savings they would receive. Mm-hmm. Tax deferral and tax savings. So it's something to keep in mind.
A lot of it's rural. It's only 25,000 people. And they they all live like out there.
Yeah, you have an interesting opportunity. Just listening to you, maybe it's your next project to consider, especially if it's if it's opportunity zone and rural, the extra tax benefits. And then obviously it's got to have a good business plan, revitalization. But like you said, if it's a good fundamental bones and people come to the town, it could get revitalized for sure.
Yeah. Well, since we bought our first building, so now we've been, we had bought these buildings with the idea to fix them up, get them all rented out. And it was a 5-year plan. And then we'd have the last one done in 5 years. Unfortunately, my husband got some super really rare cancer, had to go through an entire bone marrow transplant, which knocked about 2 years out of our, so we had all these fresh buildings. And then we had this like 2.5 year thing where we lived in special housing and we couldn't travel. We couldn't do anything. So now we're kind of back. That's okay. So now our 5-year plan is a 7-year plan.
Well, consider this. All I wanted to give you is some feedback.
And that's all that matters to me.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool what you're doing. Take a look at this. There's no drawback. Worst case scenario, there's no. But if it's an opportunity zone right there, you already have an additional benefit. But you can offer folks who would invest in a project additional tax incentives, deferrals, and potentially, if it's rural, up to 30%. If it's non-rural, 10% savings. But let's continue the conversation. Let's talk a little bit about your philosophy. I really like this. You say people before profits. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you?
Well, it means really it's important to me. When my husband and I split up, so I'm 30 years old. I have an 8-month-old baby. My husband and I have just a really unexpected, nasty breakup. And so during that time frame, I lost a house in foreclosure. My car got repossessed. I was literally living on credit cards. And nobody came knocking on my door like, hey, I hear you're in foreclosure. I'd like to buy your house. How do I help you out? Like, that never happened for me. Nobody helped me. I just lost all my stuff. And so right after that, I was looking for like a job or something. I was looking for something I could do from home. And back in the late 80s and the 90s, we had to find our jobs in the newspaper, which is something some of you have never actually held in your hands, but in the classified section of the newspaper were all the jobs. So I kept going to all these different things, and they were in a lot of hotels and a lot of ballrooms, and there'd be 300 people there. And I thought, the heck is all this? There's a lot of multi-level marketing, if you remember back to those eras. And so I met a couple guys, like I said, and they're like, oh, we do houses, we do cars, we do this, we do that. So in my mind, I thought, you know what? I could probably fix up a house. I mean, I helped my dad build the house that we grew up in, and I know how to do some basic stuff. So I thought, I'm going to do that. I'm going to be a real estate investor. I'm going to find a house in foreclosure. I'm going to help somebody because I didn't get helped. I'm going to fix up a house, and I'm going to sell it. I'm going to make money. And my daughter with me every single day. It's going to be great. So my idea, though, in my mind of like fixing up was decorating. So I thought I get some blinds, I paint, I get some carpet, I put some furniture in there, I decorate this house. Like, I'm going to be an interior decorator or something. I don't know what I thought. But as it turns out, rehabbing and decorating, not the same thing. So now I'm at Home Depot every day and I'm learning. I take a class on how to lay tile, and then I go tile the kitchen and the bathrooms, and then I learn how to do knockdown, and I paint, and I learn how to pressure wash, and I pressure wash the house, I put in the toilets, I put in the sinks. At night when my daughter's sleeping, I'm building cabinets, and I'm hanging cabinets, and it was really crazy. But the way it started was, they were like, go to the West Palm Beach County, handwrite all the foreclosures, map them out, go knock on doors, and tell people that, you'd like to buy their house and work something out. So I would go knocking on doors with the baby hanging on my hip. I thought, well, she's with me, and I understand the foreclosure. I just freshly went through it myself, and I noticed that a lot of women were answering the doors. I was like, hey, listen, my deadbeat husband just left me too. I know how you feel. I just went through it. And the women were like, I'll work with you. So I would live in the house, fix it up, sell it, move in the next one, fix it up, sell it. I did that till Ayla got into kindergarten, and I made $22,000 on my first deal. Then I made $50,000 on my next deal. Then I made like about $12,000 on my next deal. And I thought, man, look at this. I'm helping all these people going through exactly what I went through. And it's not about the money. It's about like helping them because nobody helped me. So it kind of turned into a mission. Like, hey, I can help these people and I can put the people and the situation ahead of the money. And if you do good, you know, the money comes to you. So that's kind of how it really started. I mean, my first deal, I needed money. I was living on credit cards. I desperately needed money. But after I watched what Barbara went through versus what I went through, you know, we were in that man-hating phase. Ah, man, men are all trash, you know, because we were both in like the same mentality. And I thought, you know, I helped her out. Nobody helped me. It was really a great feeling. She was happy. I was happy. We both made good money. And I thought, I'm going to do it again. Then I did it again. Then I did it again. And now 30 years later, I'm still doing it.
So that's the wonderful story. You helped people ahead of all the economics. And how did you become a short sales queen? I assume you went through a lot of post 2008, 2009 recovery and a lot of short sales. And is that how you became short sales queen?
Well, so I started off the first three years, I 100% just rehabbed houses. Because again, there were no real estate, those REIA, Real Estate Investing Associations, there were no RIAs, there was no online, like there was just nothing existed yet. So the people that I met rehabbed. So that's the only thing I knew how to do. But then a real estate investing group opened up in Boca Raton, Florida. That's still there to this day. And I went to a meeting and there was like 80 people there. And I said, oh my gosh, look at all these other people. There are other investors in town besides just me. And they were all men except for one woman. So then my first thought was like to second guess myself, like, do women not do this? Why are there all men? Why are there no women here? What am I in the wrong business? You know, all the things that you think, because again, 30 years ago, and it's still a male dominated business, but it was super male dominated back then. So I talked to Sharon, she and I started talking. We decided we're going to team up. We're going to work together. And, you know, we grew all of these things, you know, as partnerships. So as I was going to the meetings, I found out about wholesaling. So I thought, okay, I can find a house and I can sell it to a rehabber. I can just make the money in between. I don't have to rehab houses anymore. So I started wholesaling. And my first year, I wholesaled 75 houses in 1 year. 75.
Wow, that's remarkable.
It's a lot. And so now I'm like, oh my gosh, wholesaling. I don't have to fix up houses anymore. I don't have to get dirty. So I'm wholesaling. And as I'm wholesaling deals, sometimes the banks will add, like, you know, you have the deal, this is what the HUD says, and then the deal's getting ready to close. They send you over like a final. And on the very first one, I was wholesaling this house for $5,000. And the day before the closing, I got this closing documents, and the bank had added on $4,000 worth of fees. I said, no, so I called them up. I said, well, I didn't know what to do. Because in my mind, you know, you're making $5,000, you got $5,000 spent. And I'm still fresher and I need the whole $5,000. So I called the bank up. I said, hey, listen, you guys added these fees. This is not the number that we talked about. I'm not going to be able to close unless you can take those fees off. I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm not doing it. So she goes, she's like, let me put you on hold. So she puts me on hold. She comes back. She says, okay, we'll waive the fees. So I was like, they just waived $4,000 worth of fees. What the heck is that? So then I figure if it works once, it'll work again. So then I call the bank on every deal and say, hey, can you knock off some of these fees? And they're like, yeah, yeah. And they're just knocking fees off. And so then I thought, okay, I'm going to get brave. I'm going to ask the bank to knock off some of the principal. I'm just going to knock off some of the principal. So then I start calling and saying, hey, and back then they were calling it shorting, discounting the mortgages. There was like five or six terms, but there wasn't a term. So I called this bank up and I said, hey, I'm going to buy this house. And they owed $60,000. I already had it sold for $90,000. So they owed $60,000. I had it sold for $90,000. And I called the bank. I said, hey, I went through this house. It's got more damage than I thought. It's got a little bit of fire damage. It's got this, it's got that. I really need to buy this house for like 30 grand. So I'm asking them to take 60 to 30. And I'm like, there's no way. She's going to hang up on me. Oh, who are you? So she goes, well, hang on. Let me get back to you. She calls me back about an hour later. She goes, we can't take 30, but we can take 35. And I was like, are you serious? Wow. So they took 35,000.
You just learned how to negotiate short sales.
Oh, and my God. I already had it sold for 90. And I was like, woo, look at this. So then I realized I have stumbled onto something. So this is not even during the 2008 or not. It's not during any of that. This is like 1993 or four. I'm still new.
Well, this is 93. This is not even
2008. This is like in the 90s. No, I'm wholesaling and I did this. And I was like, oh my gosh, what happened?
Well, this is the short sales before they were the short sales, right?
Yeah, they weren't even called short sales yet. They were calling it shorting the mortgage, discounting the mortgage. Sometimes you would actually buy the mortgage. It was just, it wasn't fine-tuned yet. So I just said, you know, I like the term short sales. I'm going to call the bank and say, hey, you guys do short sales. I'm just going to start calling it short sales. So, and I was working with Ocwen and Washington Mutual back then and a few of those banks, and they were really easy to work with. So after that one deal, every time I got a house, I said, hey, can you knock off, you know, 10 or 15? I was just asking for large amounts of money to get knocked off the principal. And I mean, for like a year, every single solitary bank said yes. So I was like, you know what? This is a thing. This is going to be a thing. So I actually had a REIA group by that point. So I wrote a little 50-page training program called Short Sale Secrets. And at my next REIA meeting, I said, hey, I want all of you to have this. There's a million houses in foreclosure. There's only like 50 of us. We can't help everybody. But short sales are a thing and they're working. And I called an attorney and I trademarked it all the way back then. So I stumbled into it because I was going to make five on a house and they'd added 4,000 in fees and I needed to make five, not 1,000. I was still like new and so broke quite a bit. And they did it. And then of course, in 2008, Wiley Publishing called me. I guess they heard about me and asked me to write a book. So I wrote a book called Short Sale Pre-Foreclosure Investing, which was a number one bestseller. And then they asked me to write another book for homeowners called How to Sell Your House When It's Worth Less Than the Mortgage. And then 4 or 5 years ago, I wrote a book with Steve Forbes called Success Economics. So it really just grew into a thing. I just wanted to be a Girl Scout mom and a cookie mom and, you know, the fun house and a disco ball and all that stuff like that. And now it turned into a whole entire thing.
Yeah, you're the media queen now. You got these wonderful books. And let's talk a couple of words about your podcast. So you have a million downloads. You hit that milestone a few months ago. So the podcast is called the Wonderful Real Estate Podcast Ever. And you have over a million downloads, and it's a very cool podcast. You're engaging with a lot of interesting folks. So talk a little bit about that. How have you built your success in that podcast? What's your secret sauce?
You know what? Because you and I were talking earlier on my show about mentors and mistakes. And so having been a real estate trainer, now real estate investing, to be clear, I'm an investor. I don't list houses, show houses. I don't have a license. I don't do any of that. If you're in foreclosure, I'm going to find you. I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you get out of foreclosure. I'm going to help you get a fresh start and give you some money and get you moved. And then I'm going to do something with that house, whether I wholesale it, rehab it, keep it a rental, whatever. So I am specific to the investing side of things. So my podcast, I started this. I'm in my seventh season now. So back up a decade ago, people were calling me all the time to be a guest on their podcast. And it's because I had written two books and they were both bestsellers. And I was speaking in all the real estate groups around the country. So then I was the short sale queen. So I was like, you know, fairly prominent in my field. And everyone kept asking me to be on their show. And I was like, yeah, I'll be on your show. So I was, and I didn't understand it at first. Because they were all audio. So I was like, okay, so what is a podcast? And I was like, so it's like radio that's on the computer. Like, I still couldn't even wrap my mind around, like, you know, what is a podcast? I go, well, it's like a show and people tune in. I said, but it's on the computer. So it took me a minute, but I was on probably 100. And then people kept saying, you should start a podcast. I'm like, dude, I don't know nothing about this. No, I know nothing about how to start a podcast. So I did what I tell my students to do. When my students pay money to work with me, I say, here is your real estate training program. Study this program. Do everything I tell you to do, and you will close deals. So I thought, I don't want to do it by the seat of my pants because I don't know anything about podcasting. So I found a guy, and I took a class. I paid money. I took a podcasting class, and it was 30 lessons in 30 days, and every day was homework. So I pay a bunch of money for this, and I don't even know if this is a good class or not. I know nothing about podcasting. But it had a lot of good reviews. I listened to the guy. He had an English accent. I was like, okay, I really like this. I'm going to do it. So my husband saw it the day one. So, you know, I'm sitting there, and I'm like, every night, I'm like, my notes. He says, what are you doing? I said, I'm doing my homework. It's one homework. I said, dude, I signed up for a podcast class. So I'm not going to be like the average investor who buys a program, sticks it on a shelf, and never does anything. I want to learn how to do a podcast. And the fastest way I learned is to have a mentor and not do it by mistakes. I've been in real estate long enough to know mistakes cost too much money. So I took this class for 30 days and did 30 days of homework, submitted my homework, talked as a group, came up with all this. And then I decided to do a play on my name because my name Dwan is so unusual. So I was like, we'll be Dwanderful, like Dwan and Wonderful. It will be wonderful. It'll be a fun play on my name. And I took my whole class, and after the whole 30 days, and I paid a little extra to talk to the guy a few times directly. And I thought, okay. And I literally started the next week. I bought the equipment. I bought the cameras. I bought the sound. I bought all the stuff. And I started within a week of ending that class. I said, okay, I've got all the knowledge I feel like I need to know. My homework was great. My name was great. The guy said he loved everything about it. Everyone in the class was like, hey, you go, girl. And I started a week later. So, but I paid someone to teach me how to do it because I don't know how to do it. So
that was the start. But now you're the expert. You could teach this you could coach people. So,
oh, yeah. Now I could teach people how to podcast all day. But, you know, the thing is when people talk – like when people invest in my programs, they say, hey, listen, I learned my real estate investing by the seat of my pants. I made lots and lots and lots and lots of mistakes. I mean, it's a lucky on a few of those deals, I didn't go bankrupt on them. I said, but when I wanted to start this, I knew enough to hire someone that knows what they're doing to teach me to cut my learning curve. I don't want this long learning curve. I had a long learning curve with real estate. Everything I do going forward, I want to pay someone to learn how to do it. Cut my learning curve and do it. And people are like, oh, good for you. And so I tell people, like, listen, I had 30 days of homework, and it was long, it was consuming, I was writing all kinds of stuff. It was a lot. I said, I did it because I wanted it to be good. So I practice what I preach.
Yeah, you eat your cat food in a manner of speaking. If you're a dog person, it's a dog food. But if you're marketing that food, you got to eat your own dog food. But let's kind of wrap up with a couple of quick questions.
Okay.
And so my questions are hopefully way easier than your questions. You asked me about the music and the the favorite, the band, and my questions are a little bit easier. Do you have a good book that you really like? Obviously, your own books. You could recommend your own books, or if you've read a book recently and you really like it, just share your wisdom.
I have a giant library in my house. I probably have 2,000 books I've read. I went through my whole 30s, 40s, and 50s reading every real estate, every investing, every self-help, every book on the face of the earth. And right now, in this very current moment, I am teaching my grandkids how to read. So my favorite book right now is Green Eggs and Ham.
That's really cool.
And it's a good book. Because the one guy says, I won't try them. I won't do it. I don't want it. I don't want the eggs. Blah, 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 blah. I won't eat them here and there. I won't eat them in a box. It's like, everyone, if people would stop being like that, just taste the eggs, eat the green eggs, move on. Life would be great. That's my current book I'm reading with my grandkids right now, and I love it.
That's great. Any kind of advice to investors, folks who want to get on the journey, either active or passive? Obviously, you had an active journey, rehabbing houses, then whole kind of wholesaling, then short sales. Then you kind of continue to evolve, or passively just writing a check. You have any kind of wisdom, thoughts, suggestions? What's the best way to think about it? Obviously, learn. You already mentioned this many times. Don't reinvent the wheel. Learn from somebody who is a guru. Any other quick thoughts?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing, Mike, is that people, and I'm sure you've met people like this too, they say, oh, yeah, I'm thinking about getting into investing. I'm working on an LLC and I'm working on a website. Then you see them a year later and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm still working on, and they don't actually take action. So my thing is, if you want to do it, and there's a lot of shiny objects, that's a downside about the internet, there's too many shiny objects. You have people that have only done one deal, but they're good marketers. So they put up this splashy page and you go, ooh, I can write checks while I'm sleeping. I'm going to buy that. So A, stop following the shiny objects. B, only work with people who really, truly have experience and they've been through a couple of really good up and down markets and they can truly teach you how to do it. And when you find someone that your moral compass aligns with, work with just that one person. So someone came to me and said, I want to learn wholesaling. I want to be a landlord. And then somewhere along the way, they go, hey, I have money. I want to do something else. I go, okay, now you're ready to become an accredited investor. Go to Mike. I can't teach you what he does. I can send you over to the next person that is the next level that you need to do. So one person can't teach you everything. And if any trainer thinks they can, they're full of horse crap because you can't. But start where you want to start. Start where you think it sounds like fun. And then as you advance, if you have a good mentor, they'll send you someplace else to scale you on up to the top of the food chain.
That makes a lot of sense.
But you got to start. I mean, start. Yeah. Stop watching webinars. Stop buying products. Stop downloading these free things for $10 and never doing anything. Just start.
Yeah, like Nike says, just do it. If you don't do it, then nothing happens. Yeah, that's great. That's a great advice. Finally, how would folks reach out to you? It's thewonderful.com, your podcast. Just you get the last closing remarks. And
well, thewonderful.com, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, X, LinkedIn, everywhere. I'm on every social platform, mostly active on Instagram and Facebook. And come take my investing. I have a real estate investing quiz. Take my quiz. See where you're at, see what your goals are, and yeah, and work with me. I am a great mentor. I will take care of you. I'll make sure you learn, and I will teach you about people before. And people before profits also applies to real estate investors. I'm not going to sell a person some shiny object knowing that they're never going to do it. If you're never going to do it, then we don't align. I don't want your money. Unless you're serious, don't come to me. And if you are, I'll make you a millionaire.
Well, thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for sharing. Appreciate you coming on the podcast and enjoy your wonderful journey.
Thank you, Mike. It's so good to meet you. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to bigmikefund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.